Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Child Protection Sport Unit. We're part of the NSPCC and funded by UK Sports Councils. Our work supports organisations to safeguard all children taking part in sport.
In this podcast, we will be discussing abuse in positions of trust. This might be difficult to hear, and for some people might bring up distressing memories, thoughts and feelings. We have included links to organisations who can help and support you, as well as to our website at thecpsu.org.uk. Whilst it may not be easy to listen to, this podcast includes important information to help all of us to keep children safe. And remember, if you are worried about a child, even if you are unsure, you can speak to the NSPCC helpline for advice. You can call 0808 800 5000 or you can email help@nspcc.org.uk. And if you are under 18, Childline staff are there for you. You can call 0800 1111 or you can visit the Childline website at childline.org.uk. Hi, I'm Becky, one of the information officers at the CPSU, and today I'm being joined by some of my colleagues from the CPSU and the NSPCC to discuss some new legislation that has been passed, which now makes it illegal for someone to abuse their position of trust within sports or faith organisations. We will be exploring what this legislation means for these organisations, the changes that should be implemented to help safeguard children and young people, and what more still needs to be done. I will let my colleagues introduce themselves.
Hello, my name's Jude Toesland and I'm a senior consultant at the Child Protection in Sport unit.
Hi, my name's Kate Meredith and I'm senior consultant with the consultancy team at the NSPCC and I work particularly with voluntary and community sector organisations.
Hi, I'm Shirley McGinley, working in the consultancy team in NSPCC, where I'm the senior consultant for faith communities and minority ethnic communities.
Hi, I'm Fiona Becker, senior consultant at the NSPCC consultancy team.
Brilliant. Thank you for joining me today. Let's get started with this discussion then. So Kate, can you please explain what a position of trust is and who this refers to?
Yeah, sure, Becky. A position of trust is a legal term that refers to certain roles and settings where an adult has regular and direct contact with children and young people. We use the term position of trust widely to refer to those working with children. But however, for the purposes of this podcast, we'll just be discussing this in reference to the legal definition in the context specifically referred to in the relevant part of the Sexual Offences Act 2003. We'll talk more about this later. Where we are talking about positions of responsibility, we are referring to situations where an adult is working with a young person, but in a situation not yet covered by the position of trust legislation.
Thank you, Kate. And Jude, are you able to explain why the law needed to be extended to include this new legislation?
Absolutely. It's been previously established that it's illegal for adults in a small number of roles where they hold a position of trust over young people, like teachers, to enter a sexual relationship with any young person in their care. However, this left a loophole. So in many other contexts where an adult holds a similar position of trust, young people aged 16 to 17 were not similarly protected by the law from an adult abusing their power imbalance. And the Child Protection and Sport Unit identified as far back as 2002 that there were gaps in this legislation which could be exploited by potential abusers. With the CPSU's support, the NSPCC began campaigning to close the loophole.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jude. And Shirley, were faith organisations also behind this movement for the change in law?
Yes, they were. Many people don't know, but faith organisations provide a vast array of services and activities for children and young people. There is the obvious activities like religious classes, but there are others too, like youth clubs and camping and sports. And within the constant interaction with young people, there are cases of breaking boundaries to actually where a person, an adult, could go to, sexually abuse a child. From the evidence that NSPCC found 3 years prior to the campaign, they identify 400 cases of adults in positions not covered by the position of trust legislation that had been referred to the local authority safeguarding officers because these people had sexual contact with a young person in their care. So sports and leisure accounted for the largest number of cases at 26%, and the second largest was religious groups at 12%.
That's really interesting about what they were finding about faith organisations there, Shirley. And Fiona, are you able to give me any details about the campaign then off the back of that? What did the NSPCC do? What was the aim?
Thanks, Becky. The aim for the Close the Loophole campaign was to extend the existing legislation to apply to a wider range of situations where adults are in a position of responsibility over young people. The NSPCC provided the government with our concerns and case studies demonstrating why this law was so important.
And when the Close the Loophole campaign was launched by NSPCC in 2018, we reached out to those in the faith sector, mostly the national safeguarding leads for the main churches, who'd recognized that, you know, there was a loophole in legislation and this presented risk to 16 and 17 year olds. And I'm pleased that many of them got behind the campaign and supported the change in law. This is also true for the all-party parliamentary group on safeguarding in faith settings, which was meeting at the time. The APPG, for short, got behind the campaign and called for evidence from people from different faith organizations to support the change in law. And they heard many, many stories of abuse of power when it came to dealing with child sexual abuse in a faith context. And very recently as well, the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse also heard enough evidence from their investigations with the churches and other religious groups to convince them that a recommendation needed to be put in their report to support this call for a change in law to include faith leaders and others working in a faith context.
And with help and support, the campaign has been a great success. And the new legislation, which applies to adults holding a position of trust in sports or religion, has achieved royal assent and has been implemented in June of this year in England and Wales. However, I have to point out that although the legislation received royal assent in Northern Ireland, it's not currently being implemented because there isn't an executive government in place in that country.
So we are very pleased to say that as a result, a new section 22A has been added to the Sexual Offences Act 2003, outlining further positions of trust roles. This means that as of the 28th of June this year, it has been made illegal for adults in a position of trust in sport or religion to engage in a sexual relationship with any child or young people under 18 who are regularly in their direct care. But however, you know, the law remains unchanged for Scotland for the time being. And, you know, we hope things will change there too.
So the basic principle of the legislation is that no one in your organisation or setting should be having a sexual relationship with a young person, either in person or online, that you're meant, that they are meant to be caring for, coaching or instructing.
Thank you for summarising that, Fiona. We will now be exploring this legislation, what situations it will apply to, what this means for various sectors, including sport and religious organisation and dance organisations as well. This podcast will aim to provide clarity to parents and staff within these organisations, making it clear how we are all able to keep children and young people safe in light of these changes. So you've mentioned that this legislation will apply to those holding positions of trust in sport and religious organisations, but do we have any more a specific definition for these situations where it will be applied?
Well, yes, Becky, we do. And there are four criteria which are are set out, and the criteria are as follows. All these four criteria have to be met for the position of trust to apply. So first of all, it's about the role itself, and it's a role where information, advice or assistance is being passed on from someone who is knowledgeable about a subject to someone who is less knowledgeable about a subject. So for example, coaching, teaching, training, supervising or instructing. And the second criterion relates to locations. So we're talking about a role located in a sport or a religious organisation. Thirdly, we're talking about regularity. So the activity where the adult holds a position of trust is carried out on a regular basis. What we don't know is what regular actually means, and the benchmark for how regular that is not set out clearly in the legislation. And the final criterion is about the fact that the adult in question has to understand their position. They have to be aware that in relation to the young person, they carry out that activity within the criterion of being in a position of trust.
So we're asked quite a lot, what do you mean by sport and religion? So the government guidance defines sport as A, any game in which physical skill is the predominant factor, and B, any form of physical recreation which is also engaged in for purposes of competition or display. So the advice we've received from the Ministry of Justice is that sport could therefore include both games and any other form of physical recreation meeting the above definition. So it doesn't have to be A and B to meet the definition. However, either one is sufficient. And games, we were asking the Ministry of Justice, what do you mean by games? And they said that it's not further defined in the legislation, but it will instead be given its ordinary meaning.
And for religion, the definition states that religion includes those involved in a religion that holds a belief in one or more gods, and those involved in religion that do not hold a belief in a god.
Brilliant, thank you. And hopefully that makes it a little bit more clear where this legislation will be applying to. So we've had some questions about who exactly this applies to then, because with those definitions, they can maybe be applied to a lot of different settings beyond just the obvious sport or religious organisations. So for example, does it apply to sporting scouts, lifeguards, dance teachers, a player, coach or captain, leaders in a community group or contractors? Does the legislation give any further definitions for these situations?
Well, Becky, as this is new legislation, I have to admit there is some uncertainty around the specific situations and roles where this legislation would apply. We do hope it will become much clearer when this legislation is put into practice. Looking at the definitions within the legislation, it's important to consider how each of these roles fits in. For example, a dance teacher could be involved in games on a regular basis and would therefore fall within the definition of someone in a position of trust. However, if we think about a scout leader's activities, they may not fall within this category. So despite leading activities regularly, would not fall within the legal definition of a breach of a position of trust. So we encourage organisations and settings to look carefully at the activities they run to see if their specific activities fall within the legislation, even though the organisation itself doesn't automatically. Let me explain that a bit more. For example, a scout group may have a football team who regularly competes, and this football activity would be covered under the legislation, whilst other activities put on by the scout group may not be, such as arts and crafts. However, this will be open to interpretation, and we think it'll be tested in case law. We do hope that the legislation will be extended to include further situations and roles where it might be against the law to abuse a position of trust. But what we do say to all organisations and settings is it's good practice for all roles in positions of responsibility over young people to apply the same principles as those in a legal position of trust.
Faith organisations, for, you know, they will need to really consider what these roles will look like. And I could imagine it might be roles such as being a member of the clergy or a faith leader, a teacher who gives religious instructions, a youth worker or youth leader, maybe a pastoral support person, or even someone who, you know, conducts the choir or music group or sports or drama club, which involves young people. So they really need to sit down and figure out what roles in our organizations will fall into this category, which we talk about the being in a position of trust.
So with a lot of religious, sports, dance and many other activities being held online, especially following the COVID pandemic, does this legislation apply to all delivery methods, say online and face to face?
Yes, Becky, it does. The legislation applies to online or face to face delivery where the above criteria are fulfilled. And as we know, whilst working online can offer new flexible methods of delivery and communication, it can bring with it additional vulnerabilities and risks for children and young people. And so when working with children and young people online, we should always be mindful of those risks, and we should choose appropriate platforms, and we should ensure that we're following our organisation's codes of conduct. A particular challenge in online working can be around the question of boundaries, for example. You might think you're being clear with a young person about the boundaries of your relationship, but what happens if they want to add you to their friends list and have somehow got hold of your personal social media account details? Texting young people is another thing that's potentially problematic. If you need to do it, make sure it is for work purposes only, use a work phone and number only, and use a platform that creates a permanent record of the communication so that it is open to scrutiny, so no Snapchat or other platforms with disappearing images. We need to remember that it is not just a case about being clear about boundaries in our own minds. We also need to think about how a young person might be perceiving their relationship with you as well.
Brilliant. Thank you, Kate. I guess that clears up a lot more about the online relationships of children and young people as well. And another question that we've had is, do you need to be qualified or licensed to be classed as holding in a position of trust role?
No, you don't, Becky. The role is defined according to responsibility, the location, the frequency and knowledge as outlined in the criteria that we've spoken about already. So qualification or licensing is not really a consideration. It also does not matter if the person holding the position of trust is paid or the role is voluntary.
Okay, fantastic. And along the same line, do you have to be 18 years old to be and above to be in a position of trust?
Good question. Yes, our understanding is that the individual working with the young person needs to be a legal adult for them to be considered to be in a position of trust. That is to say, needs to be at least 18 years old.
Okay, fantastic. And hopefully that makes it a little bit more clear to whom and where this legislation will be applying then. But what should someone do if they have a concern about a breach of position of trust?
Well, the main thing to remember is that if you have a concern that the law has been broken as someone has abused their position of trust, this legislation now makes you duty bound to inform the police. So it will be then up to the police to treat it as a criminal investigation to establish if it reaches the criteria for a criminal offence to have been committed.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Jude. So we will now be discussing what organisations should be putting in place on the back of this new legislation being passed. So does the law require any organisations to implement any new procedures or policies?
it's an interesting question, because while the campaign was underway, the CPSU supported sports organisations to change their code of conduct to ensure that those responsible for under 18, such as a coach, should not have a sexual relationship with them, and to make this a disciplinary offence with a referral to the DBS as part of that. So in many ways, the government are just catching up with what sport and physical activity organisations are currently doing. What this law should do is to provide legal support for the good practice that sports and other organisations are already doing in their general policies and procedures.
And in addition to that, Jude, if organisations have not already done this, it's recommended that they review and update their safeguarding all child protection policies right away. And I say this especially for faith organisations. And this is really just to help ensure that the change is being recognised and that everyone will be aware of it. The organisation should also make it clear in the policy that a faith leader or someone else in a position of trust who has, you know, sexual activity with a child of 16 and or 17 will be breaking the law, and that there will be consequences for their actions. And this really should be embedded in the training material also that they use to reflect this update within the law. Young people as well, they need to be aware of the change, especially when an adult, someone over 18, who's in question about breaking possibly breaking this position of trust law, maybe not much older than the young person themselves. So, for example, a young leader in, you know, just in their early 20s, where, you know, it's not much a big difference between the 16 and 17 year old and the leader. They also need to be quite aware of this change in law. Faith organizations should also ensure that there are safe and accessible routes to enable young people to make disclosures or just to have someone there that they can talk to about any concerns. And these are, you know, good practice for faith organizations as well as other organizations too.
Yes, yes, you're right there, Shirley. Our advice is that it should be against all organisations' code of conduct for someone who has a position of responsibility to have a sexual relationship with someone under 18 that they were responsible for, which would already trigger disciplinary action. It's important that people follow the organisation's safeguarding procedures. And if you are concerned that anyone is or has abused their position of trust and subsequently a crime has been committed, it should be reported directly to the police. But do ensure the safeguarding officer in your organisation or setting is aware of what you're doing as well. Now, for those organisations that are registered charities, a breach of a position of trust would constitute a serious incident, the need for a serious incident report. So a referral would have to be made to the Charity Commission following your own internal procedures, because they would want to know that that's happened and what action you're going to take about it.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. So it sounds like it's really positive news that this legislation has come into force. But is there anything else that the law does not include that the NSPCC campaigned for or wanted?
Well, as you say, Becky, the legislation is a very positive step in the right direction. And of course, the government is rightly concerned not to impinge upon the rights of 16 and 17 year olds to engage in non-abusive and consensual sexual relationships. But also it's important to remember that the law is continuing to change, so some details might continue to be amended. But many argue that despite being extended to include religion and sport, the legal definition of positions of trust still does not go far enough. Youth work is not included as a setting, for example, nor are private tutors, nor are army or sea cadet leaders, nor a host of other roles in which adults are supporting or working with young people in the community. What about non-religious music or drama, for example, like an amateur pantomime? What about outdoor and conservation type activities like camping expeditions, reclaiming a wildlife meadow, or looking after an area of woodland? What about social engagement activities, such as helping to provide support to other members of the community who might be in need? It is complex, especially with many young people progressing from being participants to young leaders in their own right, but we need to address it.
Fantastic. Thank you, Kate. So there is still a part of this legislation that the NSPCC campaigned for that just hasn't been covered just yet. What is the NSPCC's next step to address these gaps then?
Well, Becky, the campaign continues for the NSPCC to address other areas other than sport and religion. For sport and religion, the CPSU and NSPCC were able to provide evidence and examples of abuse of positions of trust. But we will continue to campaign for this to cover other sectors where we know that this takes place.
Okay, brilliant. And in all your opinions, is the legislation clear enough on which relationships this will be covering?
It could also be seen as a limitation that the law only considers there to have been an abuse of a position of trust where there has been a sexual relationship with the young person. This is not fully defined, although it is clear under the Sexual Offences Act 2003 that the sexual abuse can be contact or non-contact, and as we've seen, can be either in person or online. And for more information on child sexual abuse, we'd invite anyone listening to the podcast to take a look at the NSPCC's website at www.nspcc.org.uk.
Brilliant. Thank you, Kate. And what if someone in a position of trust is having a relationship with someone that they are not directly coaching? For example, they coach on a different day to that which their partner is attending.
It's an interesting question, Becky, and unfortunately the legislation is limited on its guidance regarding situations some of this. So we can only advise on this based on the previous legislation concerning the education sector. And this explains that a teacher may have a lawful sexual relationship with a consenting individual aged 16 to 17 who is not a student at their school. So they may be a student at another school, so long as it's not a school that the teacher currently teaches at. So applying this to the sports sector, the position of trust applies when someone is directly responsible for an under 18 by, for example, being a coach in their club, but not for young athletes coached in another club.
Okay, brilliant, thank you. So you can understand where a position of trust might be established whilst someone is having a sexual relationship with someone 16 or 17. And what would the legislation still apply then if the sexual relationship began before this position of trust was established, or even before this law was being introduced?
Well, whilst it should generally be considered against an organisation's code of conduct for someone in a position of trust to be in a sexual relationship with someone aged under 18 in their care, the law states that it is not an offence under the new or existing legislation if the young person and the individual holding a position of trust are legally married, in a civil partnership, or had a lawful sexual relationship immediately prior to the position of trust arising. It is up to the person holding the position of trust to provide evidence that these situations should be considered a valid exemption in their case.
Okay, brilliant. That makes that a lot more clear then. And would the legislation apply if the person in the position of trust thought the individual was over 18?
Well, Becky, in this case, it would be something for the police to consider. If someone was knowingly having a sexual relationship with someone under 18 where they were in a position of trust over them.
Okay, fantastic. So if you're not quite clear on whether or not it will apply, it is up to the police in these situations to establish that then.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. And what should a person do in a position of trust if they suspect that a 16 or 17 year old is seeking some form of relationship with them?
That's an interesting question, Becky. And I would say find an appropriate time and location away from other young people to discuss it with them, but we don't recommend that you do it online through your personal online accounts. So you might just want to find that space, and you want to explain as well to that young person why the relationship, you know, is inappropriate and maybe illegal because of this new law. You should also make your designated safeguarding officer, your manager, or whoever is most appropriate aware of your concern and exactly what you have done, and set to clarify the position with the young person. If you are concerned about the welfare of the young person, raise it through your normal safeguarding procedures.
Fantastic, thank you. So moving forward then, if organisations or anyone who is listening to this podcast are yet to implement the appropriate procedures and policies that we have discussed today, who would be responsible for making these changes required in light of this change in legislation then?
Well, Becky, it can vary really across different organisations. The person that acts on making the changes required to policies and procedures is usually the safeguarding lead for the organisation or the designated safeguarding officer. But it very much depends on the governance framework in the organisation and who holds the responsibility for making policy changes.
Fantastic. Thank you, Fiona. And if someone listening to this podcast wanted to find out more information about this new law and what it means for their role within safeguarding children and young people, is there anywhere that they can receive training on this update?
There's a range of training available from NSPCC, both through the NSPCC Learning Service and also through UK coaching through local authorities. And if you're in sport, through your national governing bodies and active partnerships, as well as a number of other providers. And that includes both formal training courses, but also you can access podcasts, webinars and workshops such as this. And we would really encourage you to share this information with your colleagues to make sure that everyone's aware of the change in legislation. So you can do this by encouraging them to listen to this podcast, to read information on the CPSU and NSPCC websites. And that includes the CPSU briefing on the position of trust within sport and also around position of trust in dance. And interact with the communications of the NSPCC and CPSU messages. So that could be through the existing channels, YouTube, for example, that could be through email, that could be through social media. So you may want to follow us on Twitter. Both the NSPCC and CPSU have accounts. And you should also be incorporating positions of trust legislation within your safeguarding procedures. So all your colleagues should be familiar with, and you should review your safeguarding plans, including your procedures and your training, to make sure you're covering this area fully.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jude. So now we're coming to the end of our podcast. So I'm going to round up the key points that we would like you to take away with you today. So remember, this is where the law is at the moment. So that is that it is illegal to abuse a position of trust in a sport or religious setting, in addition to the settings where it was previously illegal. But this may change, and we are actually hoping that this will be extended in the future. All sports and religious organisations should revisit their policies, code of conduct and training to make sure that they all align with this new legislation. Organisations who work with children in other settings shouldn't automatically assume that they are not included, so should check carefully against the legislation and criteria to check if they are covered. Even if your organisation does not fall within the legal definition of these settings, or your role does not fall within the criteria of a position of trust as outlined in this legislation, you should still follow the principles. Your organisation should check that they have reviewed their key documents and make sure that it is clear that it is still against a code of conduct for those in any positions of responsibility to abuse children and young people and have an inappropriate relationship with them. If you have a concern, even if you are not sure if the law covers your organisation or the role in question, you should still report this to your safeguarding lead and the police. It will be up to the police to determine if the law has been broken. Finally, don't think that abuse cannot happen in your organisation. Unfortunately, it can and it does happen anywhere. And we all carry the responsibility to keep children and young people safe. As Jude mentioned earlier, we do have some additional resources that we have produced, which will help you navigate this new legislation and what this means for your organisation. On the CPSU website, we have an information briefing for sports organisations, and we also have one that's specific to dance. We also have a frequently asked questions document where we answer a few more questions that we maybe didn't address in this podcast today. On the NSPCC Learning website, we have some general information about what positions of trust means for other organisations. And on the NSPCC website and the CPSU website, we have a lot of safer recruitment resources which you can use. And that concludes the end of our podcast. So I'd like to say thank you to my colleagues for joining me today. And thank you to you for listening. And I hope you've enjoyed this podcast.